I've got bad news and good news. Bad news is I've got a cold, so I'm probably going to cough a little bit. My voice sounds funny. But the good news is it'll be a shorter sermon. You'll take it, right? Well, if you have your Bible, we're in Judges chapter 5. And that's not normally how I start a sermon. That's how you're told not to start, is by jumping right to the text. But in Judges chapter 5, we find something that's a little bit different, a little bit unique in the book of Judges. As we've gone through this so far, it's been narrative. It's been where we've been reading about what happened. It's been a little bit like a history lesson. But when we get to chapter 5, the structure changes. If you're looking at it, it's all indented funny, and it looks more like something that should be in the book of Psalms than in the book of Judges. And that's because maybe it should be. It's a song, after all. And so in chapter 5, we have the Song of Deborah, where she sings this song. We, in a couple other places, have this type of thing happen. One of them, as I mentioned last week, is when the Israelites come out of Egypt and come through the Red Sea, Moses' sister Miriam sings a song. And so there were a lot of parallels between the Exodus from Egypt and God delivering his people and what we read about last week in chapter 4, and now continue on into in chapter 5. These songs are always difficult for me. It's always hard to preach on a psalm or like hear the Song of Deborah because it's just different. The structure is different. It's not always a story. It's not an outline type structure like you find in Paul's letters. There's more artistry in a song. And so as we go through this, it's going to be a little bit difficult, more difficult to find the structure and all of that. As I was wrestling with it this week, I read one scholar said this is one of the most difficult passages in the Old Testament. So that made me feel a little bit better about it. I'm not the only one who struggled with it. Jimmy is going to preach a couple times as we go through this series in Judges, and I was really hoping when I laid it out that he would get this week so I wouldn't have to, but here we are. So we're going to jump into it, and all that to say, I'm starting pretty negative here, I feel like, but the reality is, as I dug into it, there's a lot here, and it says something very important that I want you to walk away with today. And what it talks about is the idea of being God's friend or God's enemy. Which are you? Are you a friend or an enemy? There was a little girl a number of years ago who told her mom, "Mommy, I'm afraid of God." And she said, "Why are you afraid of God?" And she said, "Well, because he calls me Fred." And she said, "Why do you think God calls you Fred?" She goes, "Well, we sing about it in church. I am afraid of God. I am afraid of God. I am afraid of God. He calls me Fred." If you're not familiar, the song really is, "I am a friend of God. He calls me friend." And so that's what we're going to talk about today, though. As we go through this, it's really easy, and often we're tempted to jump right to, well, I'm a follower of Jesus. I've trusted Jesus for my salvation. I'm one of God's people. Therefore, I'm a friend of God. And this song is going to challenge that a little bit as we go through this morning. So Judges chapter 5, starting in verse 1, we read this. "Then sang Deborah and Barak, the son of Abinoam, on that day, that the leaders took the lead in Israel, that people offered themselves willingly. Bless the Lord. Hear, O kings, give ear, O princes. To the Lord I will sing. I will make melody to the Lord, the God of Israel. Lord, when you went out from Seir, when you marched from the region of Edom, the earth trembled and the heavens dropped. Yes, the clouds dropped water. The mountains quaked before the Lord, even Sinai before the Lord, the God of Israel. In the days of Shamgar, son of Anath, in the days of Jael, the highways were abandoned, the travelers kept to the byways. The villagers ceased in Israel. They ceased to be until I arose. I, Deborah, arose as a mother in Israel. When new gods were chosen, when then war was in the gates, was shield or spear to be seen among 40,000 in Israel? My heart goes out to the commanders of Israel who offered themselves willingly among the people. Bless the Lord. Tell of it, you who ride on white donkeys, you who sit in rich carpets, you who walk by the way. To the sound of musicians at the watering places, there they repeat the righteous triumphs of the Lord, the righteous triumphs of his villagers in Israel." The first point here is that that God is at work, that it was God who defeated the Canaanites. If you're last week, we talked about Barak, and he was one of the judges of Israel. It's the same story that is told in this song, but in the song we get a little bit different perspective. Just to catch you up a little bit, last week we talked about how the people of Israel, they were living in sin, they were rebelling against God, they were worshiping false gods. God had turned them over to the Canaanites, and they had been under their subjection for 20 years. And as they're there, and things are bad in Israel, it's a rough time in Israel's history, we read that the people eventually cried out to God. And the structure is that God would raise up a judge, and that judge, God would be with that judge and go and deliver his people from their enemies. And with Barak, though, the structure was a little bit different. God didn't call Barak directly, but we learned that there was this prophetess, Deborah, who was judging Israel, not in the sense that she was delivering them in a military way as a leader, but that she was kind of judging in a judicial way in a part of Israel. And there's a recognition that God was with her. She was a prophetess. And so God spoke his message to his people through her. And at one point, she called Barak and said, come. And she had him come before her. And she said, Barak, God is calling you to go and fight the Canaanites. He's calling you to lead his army against Canaan and defeat God's enemy and give his people freedom, give his people rest. What was Barak's response? I'm not quite so sure about that. And what he actually said was, I'll go, but only if you go with me. He needed to bring her along, and she said, okay, fine, I will go, but because of your resistance and your hesitation, a woman is going to be the one who triumphs over the Canaanite general. And so that's what we talked about last time. But when we get to this passage, we learn that it's not so cut and dry, so black and white. It's not that Barak went and led this vast army of Israel against the Canaanites and won the battle. What we learn here is that it was actually God who won the battle. God was at work. And so go back to the beginning, that the leaders took the lead in Israel, that the people offered themselves willingly, bless the Lord. Hear, O kings, give ear, O princes, to the Lord I will sing. I will make melody to the Lord, the God of Israel. Deborah, as she sings this, is giving God the glory for what has happened. She's in a sense saying that the leaders who took the lead in Israel, they did this in large part because they were following God's lead. They were willing to be used by him. When he called and said, I want you to participate, they willingly said yes and stood up and said, we'll be a part. Do you do that in your life? When you sense God is saying, hey, I want you to serve in this way, or I want you to contribute in this way, or I want you to give of yourself in this way, what's your response? Is it, yes, Lord, take me and use me as you see fit? Or is it, well, hold on a second, God. There are people who are better qualified than me. There are people who would be better for you to use in this way than me. Or there's hesitation sometimes. As we go through this, think about where you are with that. He goes on in verse 4, she does in her song. Lord, when you went out from Seir, when you marched from the region of Edom, the earth trembled and the heavens dropped. Yes, the clouds dropped water. The mountains quaked before the Lord, even Sinai before the Lord, the God of Israel. What's she saying here? She's acknowledging that it was God who gave the victory. It was God who fought the battle. This wasn't just a clash between two armies. This was God divinely intervening and getting involved with his people and rescuing them. Last week we talked about how the Canaanites had an advantage. They had 900 chariots, and they went to war. And when they went to war, that was the military technology of the day. It was difficult to defeat an iron-plated chariot. It was almost impossible. And we're going to read in a minute that the people in Israel, they didn't even hardly have weapons. How would they defeat such a force? And the answer is they wouldn't. But there are some things about iron chariots that you kind of need to understand. They're great in certain places, in certain terrains, in certain circumstances. But when you're fighting in a swamp or a mud puddle, it's not so good. Did you catch what God did? He caused it to rain. And so these chariots that would be fabulous on pavement or hard ground where they have an advantage, when the mud came and it got muddy, they were almost worthless as they became caked and bogged down in the mud. And you can't argue that, well, the Israelites were very mighty and defeated the Canaanites. And you can't really argue that, boy, they got lucky it rained that day. No, Deborah says that was God at work. It was God who defeated the enemy, and he did it by miraculous ways, by controlling the weather. Verse 6. In the days of Shamgar, son of Anath, in the days of Jael, the highways were abandoned and travelers kept to the byways. The villagers ceased in Israel. They ceased to be until I arose. I, Deborah, arose as a mother in Israel. Interesting thing that goes on here. Did you catch it? In the days of Shamgar, son of Anath, in the days of Jael, what do we know about those people? There are two things that I want you to notice about these couple verses right here. The first one is that it would be very easy for Deborah to say, in the days when I judged Israel. But she doesn't do that. She doesn't identify the time period by the time that she was involved. She mentions her involvement, but she anchors it to the other judges who and Shamgar was one of the other judges. Do you remember Shamgar? We talked about him. We talked about him the same day we talked about Ehud. And you remember we spent a lot of time on Ehud and then not much time on Shamgar. He had one verse. And there were some things that we concluded about him from that one verse, but one of them was that he likely wasn't even an Israelite. He was probably a foreigner. And Jael is the other one that she mentions. Jael was the one who you'll remember, the again, not an Israelite, somebody from outside of Israel. She was the one who was going to defeat the Canaanite general by driving a tent spike through his temple, as we read about last week. And so as Deborah is singing this song, she doesn't take credit for herself, but talks about these other individuals who were involved. And she happens to pick two people that weren't Israelites. And I think she does that for a reason that's significant. And we'll talk about that in a few minutes. But the other thing that is in this time period, the highways were abandoned. The travelers kept to the byways. The things were not going well in Israel. It was a dangerous place. It was a dangerous time. And if you traveled the highways, it was likely that you would be attacked or overtaken, probably by the Canaanites who were ruling over Israel at this point. In other words, the roads weren't safe. If you're going to travel and head, for example, to Ohio, there are some times where you might drive right through Chicago. But when things are not going well in Chicago and there's been a lot of violence in Chicago, more than normal, do you drive through or do you go around? You go around. You don't want to be involved in that. You don't want to get caught in any dangerous situation. That's what it's like here. So instead of traveling the main highways, the people, they're traveling the byways. The villagers ceased. It's like village life has stopped. They're not conducting business the way they normally would. They're not outside of the village doing their normal stuff, growing crops and different things like that. They're kind of cloistered. They're in defense mode. Things are not going well. Verse 8, when the gods were chosen, then war was in the gates. Was shield or spear to be seen among 40,000 in Israel? My heart goes out to the commanders of Israel who offered themselves willingly among the people. Bless the Lord. Here's where we learn that Israel, they might have had 40,000 men, and you think about 900 chariots and 40,000 men. Certainly there were more than 900 men in the Canaanite army. But the Israelite soldiers, they didn't even have weapons. And so they're going against a superior military, in a people that has oppressed them for 20 years. A people that is trained, that has all the military technology, and they have none. This is almost a David and Goliath situation here. And she praises God because there were some in Israel who were willing to step up and lead the people, even though there wasn't much hope, if any, that they would be victorious. Verse 10, tell of it, you who ride on white donkeys, you who sit on rich carpets, and you who walk by the way, to the sound of musicians at the watering places. There they repeat the righteous triumphs of the Lord, the righteous triumphs of his villagers in Israel. People are talking about what happened. The people in Israel at the time, they recognize that God is at work. They recognize that this was God's victory. It wasn't that they were a better army or a stronger army or had better weapons. It was strictly that God won this battle. There was no questioning it among the people, and they were glorifying God because of it. And so the first point here that I want to get across is that when God is at work, God is victorious. When God is at work, God is victorious. If he's called you to do something, then you can be confident that he's going to come through and deliver on that. If he's inviting you to participate in what he's doing, you can be confident that he's going to accomplish his goal. And he's asking you to play a part, be a part of that. Just like he used this army of Israel, even though they didn't have the weapons, even though they weren't equipped, he gave them victory over their enemies. And he could do the same for you and for me. So that means we have a choice. And the choice is, are we going to step out in faith, in obedience, or are we going to say no, God, for whatever reason? Look at the next chunk of this, starting halfway through verse 11. Then down to the gates marched the people of the Lord. Awake, Deborah, awake, awake, break out in song. Arise, Barak, lead away your captives, O son of Abinom. Then down marched the remnant of the noble. The people of the Lord marched down for me against the mighty. From Ephraim, their root, they marched down into the valley, following you, Benjamin, with your kinsmen. From Machir marched down the commanders, and from Zebulun, those who bear the lieutenant's staff. The princes of Issachar came with Deborah, and Issachar faithful to Barak. Into the valley they rushed at his heels. Among the clans of Reuben, there were great searching of heart. Why did you sit among the sheepfolds to hear the whistling for the flocks? Among the clans of Reuben, there were great searchings of heart. Gilead stayed beyond the Jordan, and Dan, why did he stay with the ships? And Asher sat still at the coast of the sea, staying by his landings. Zebulun is a people who risked their lives to the death. Naphtali, too, on the heights of the field. The kings came, they fought, then fought the kings of Canaan. At Tanakh, by the waters of Megiddo, they got no spoils of silver. From heaven, the stars fought. From their courses, they fought against Sisera. The torrent of Kishon swept them away. The ancient torrent, the torrent of Kishon. March on, my soul, with might. Then loud beat the horse's hooves with the galloping of his steeds. Curse Merez, says the angel of the Lord. Curse its inhabitants thoroughly, because they had not come to the help of the Lord, to the help of the Lord against the mighty. It's a long chunk, but there are two different people groups that basically are highlighted in this song. She starts out by talking about a group of the tribes of Israel who were willing to step out in faith. But when God called and said, hey, we're going to go to battle, I'm going to defeat the Canaanites, and I want you to participate, I want you to be involved. There were several tribes that stepped up and said, yeah, we'll do it, we'll go, who stepped out in faith, who were willing participants with God in what he was doing. But on the other hand, there was another group of people, also Israelites, also God's chosen people. And the song names several tribes who couldn't be bothered to do what God was asking them to do. It talks about Reuben, who they were too busy watching the sheep. They couldn't participate in the battle. They were listening for the whistle of the sheep. They were too busy with their livelihoods to get involved. Talks about other tribes who were across the Jordan, that they didn't want to travel that far. Other tribes were close to the sea. They didn't want to leave the ports. They didn't want to leave the commerce that was happening there in the ports along the coast. And so there's a choice that's laid out here. Are you going to participate with what God's doing, or are you not going to participate? And notice that they're all God's people. They're all God's people. It's not as simple as drawing a line between those who are God's and those who aren't. Those who recognize God as their God and those who are worshiping false gods. They were all Israelites. They were all descended from Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. They all, no doubt, called themselves God's people. Yet many of them failed. Many of them failed. And so those who failed, what was the result? Verse 23, curse Meraz, says the angel of the Lord. Curse the inhabitants thoroughly, because they did not come to the help of the Lord, to the help of the Lord against the mighty. There's blessing and curses. And as we're going to see in the next chunk, the blessings go to those who are God's friend, and the curses go to those who are his enemies. Look at the next verse with me, verse 24. Verse 24, we read, most blessed of women be Jael, the wife of Heber the Kenite, of dwelling women most blessed. He asked for water, and she gave him milk. She brought him curds in a noble's bowl. She sent her hand to the tent peg and her right hand to the workman's mallet. She struck Sisera. She crushed his head. She shattered and pierced his temple. Between her feet, he sank. He fell. He lay still. Between her feet, he sank. He fell. Where he sank, there he fell, dead. Out of the window she peered, the mother of Sisera, wailed through the lattice. Why is his chariot not so long in coming? Why tarry the hoofbeats of his chariots? Her wisest princesses answer. Indeed, she answers herself. Have they not found and divided the spoil, a womb or two for every man? Spoil of dyed materials for Sisera, the spoil of dyed materials embroidered, two pieces of dyed work embroidered for the neck as spoil. So may all of your enemies perish, O Lord, but your friends be like the sun as he rises in his might, and the land had rest for 40 years. In the last section, it talked about two groups of Israelites, one group who was following God and stepping out in faith, and another group who refused to obey. In the next verse, verse 24, it starts talking about Jael, and she was a non-Israelite woman. She was the one that was the one who killed Sisera, the general of the Canaanite army. And she was the one who received the blessing because of that. She was one who, even though she was outside of God's people, was willing to step up and act in faith for God. She fought for God. And so we come back to our question. At the end of the song, it goes back to Sisera's mom, who's sitting waiting at her window for her son to return from battle. And as she sits there, she's questioning, why is it taking so long? This shouldn't have taken this long. And the princesses who are with her are saying, well, surely they've won, and there's just so much spoil that they're still dividing the spoil. That's why they've been delayed. But you and I know what's really happened. He's been defeated. But it ends with that verse, verse 31. So may all of your enemies perish, O Lord, but your friends be like the sun as he rises in his might. Question is, are you a friend of God or a foe? Are you a friend or an enemy? And it's not as simple as saying, well, I have trusted Jesus for my salvation. All the people that we talked about in the last section would have said, yeah, we're all God's people. What it came down to was action. It came down to behavior. It's one thing to say, yes, I believe in Jesus, but it's another to say, and because of that, I step out in faith and obedience when God calls me to do something. For Barak, it was go and fight the Canaanites. And we saw his hesitancy, and we saw that there was a loss of blessing because of it. For Jael, it was eliminate God's enemy. And even though she was an outsider, she stepped up and did it. She was faithful. So the question is, where are you with this? When God calls you to do something, if he calls you to serve in some way, are you going to sit back and say, well, I don't really feel equipped, or there are other people who probably would do a better job, or what if I sign up to teach and somebody asks a tough question, or whatever it might be? Yeah, those are all possibilities. But at the end of the day, it's not just you who are doing it. If God calls you to do something, it's because he's in it with you. He's already doing it. He's just asking you to participate with him, just like he did the people that we're reading about in the Old Testament. So what are you going to do with that? Are you doing the things that we've talked about over and over that cause growth? If he's calling you to go deeper with him in relationship and spend time in prayer and reading his word, are you doing that? If he calls you to give in a way that's significant, are you willing to step out in faith and do that? If he calls you to serve in some way, are you willing to join him in what he's doing and serve and give of yourself? Are you willing to walk alongside someone as they're growing in their faith and help them grow to spiritual maturity? Which, by the way, requires you to let them see the real you. And sometimes that's not comfortable. Are you willing to do that? Well, maybe someday when I get it all figured out and I've got all my ducks in a row, I'll do that. Yeah, you probably never will if that's what you're waiting for. Are you willing to join God in what he's doing? Are you willing to step out in faith? Are you willing to put action to the words? And if so, then you're the friend of God that he talks about in that last verse. And you will no doubt experience his blessing. And sometimes those blessings come in ways that we don't expect or wouldn't otherwise see. But looking back, you see a history of God blessing over and over and over again. That's what I want for you. I want you to be a friend of God. I want you to experience the blessings of God as you live your life, a life lived in obedience to him. Let's close in a word of prayer. Father God, thank you for being a God who loves us and cares about us, a God who's actively involved in our world, a God who calls us to join you in what you're doing and doesn't leave it up to us to figure it out, but miraculously works and uses us in that process. God, my prayer is that you would use each and every one of us that are here today, that we would be counted among your friends, those who are willing to step out in faithful obedience to you. And as we do that, we experience your blessing. God, we look at what you've done in our lives, what you've done in the life of this church, and we see nothing but blessings over and over and over again. We are confident that you're involved here with the work that's going on. My prayer is that you would continue that and that we would join you, that we would continue to see you work in miraculous ways, and that we would experience your blessings as a result. It's in your son's name that we pray. Amen.